We have more people making music. Music making and the sale of music products is strong. We see a channel shift and we see a specialization of retail because people are going to put on shoes and go to a store or go to a website and take time to watch videos and invest because they have a specialized need. And so when we think about specialization and service, the ones that are succeeding are focused on specialization and service.
Welcome to Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle. I'm Bobby Osinski, and this is a show all about music, music production, and the music business. My guest today is President and CEO of the National Association of Music Merchants, John Malincak. John started in the music business as a hotshot trumpet player in New Orleans with a penchant for music education. From an early age, he was also interested in music technology, which eventually led to a job as Director of Education with Presonus, then with book publisher Hal Leonard, and then to his current position at NAMM. During our interview, we spoke about how trade shows like NAMM are evolving, how NAMM compares to trade shows in other industries, how music consumers and retailers have changed through the years, how his passion for music technology actually led to major changes in school curriculums, and much more. I spoke with John from his office in Carlsbad, California. I'll tell you where I want to start. Let's start with the NAMM show. And since last year was your first one as CEO, what did you learn from that? What surprised you?
Surprised me at the NAMM show. Well, the sheer passion of everyone in the building. Like it was surprising to me as like who knows me? I've been, Music Inc. announced me, a couple people announced me, but just how much people like really see NAMM as a huge part of their industry, and like my inability to walk three steps without 100 people running up, which was actually just amazing. And it's not me, it's not like, oh, that's John Malincak. It's like, oh wow, like that's NAMM. Like that is, and they see me as like this amazing organization, and just taking on that role, that was, it's just really special. I mean, truly special.
And the interesting thing is that there's a feeling about NAMM that you can't get anywhere else. I mean, you can go to other trade shows and it's not the same. It just is not. But I would imagine that you being inside the organization, you feel that even more intensely than just, an attendee or an exhibitor.
Absolutely. And it really comes from internal. I can tell you, like, every day in this building here, it is like, how do we serve members? What do our members need? Or like the amount of empathy that happens with this team of like, oh my gosh, a member's upset because something's not going right, or they missed a deadline for a discount. Can we try to call and help them out? Like the amount of like, just like energy that comes through here, that's like empathetic energy. Like that's where it comes from. I think there's just truly, and it goes both ways, right? Like members care so much about NAMM and we feel that, and NAMM cares so much about the industry. I think there's a difference. And I actually go to a lot of trade shows now in and outside of our industry to help understand what we can continue to do better as a trade show. But I go to them and I'm like, this is just a trade show. Like there's the heart and soul, and I get it. Like we're music too. It helps that we're music and passion. Like insurance conferences don't have as much passion, I think, as music conferences. Nothing wrong with insurance when you need it. But, at the same time, I do think that, as an association, like first and foremost, we care about growing the industry, and the NAMM show is a very large piece of that mission. And that's what I feel here, and I think that's what people feel about NAMM as well.
Well, let's go there for a second, because as far as members are concerned, the industry's changed so much, and the mom and pop retailers, which used to be the backbone of both the NAMM show and NAMM in general, that's all changed. There's many fewer of them. And even the large retailers, not as many of those either. So what is NAMM doing in relation to that to spur the industry forward?
Right. You're right on. I mean, I can share with you that, consistently year over year, month to month, as we look at membership, about 25% of past members from 5+ years ago and earlier are just out of business. We lost about 25% of the smaller retailers, particularly you know, from 5 years ago to today. And that's this continued consolidation. And some of it's closing and some of it's consolidation. And, you know, we see that. So what we see is definitely a shift in consumer habits. And what we're doing to really make sure the NAMM show is relevant and current and ahead of the trends is we're first of all looking at what factors are special to the music products industry, but also what factors are, I mean, not special and common to other industries. So you look at what's happening in consumer buying habits, mass market, Amazon, et cetera. So any industry, USA, people are not going to put on shoes and get in a car to get something under $100 that's an accessory that they could just order and have delivered to them. And that's any industry. You look at like sort of like small accessory sales across the board, whether it's shoelaces or toilet paper. That's what we're seeing. And that's just a common piece. So we know what we're seeing. And this is when you look at like how Best Buy has done such a good job. And quite frankly, what Guitar Center's reimagination under Gabe is doing right now. We are a specialized industry. We are, you know, so yes, you look at like in-store brick and mortar and retail possibly shrinking. We look at the trade numbers, but actually we have people making music. We have more people making music. Music making and the sale of music products is strong. We see a channel shift and we see a specialization of retail because people are going to put on shoes and go to a store or go to a website and take time to watch videos and invest because they have a specialized need. And so when we think about specialization and service, the ones that are succeeding are focused on specialization and service. And you know, when you go to Sweetwater.com or Tomon.com or a lot of really successful independent retailers' websites, you get really specialized service. When you go into one of the successful independent shops, and a lot of them might be drum shops or guitar shops, you're getting specialized service. And that's what you see popping up at Guitar Centers all over the country. You see these specialized kiosks of pedal boards that you can now go in and plug in and try. And speaker, you know, they're creating these specialized things. So that's really what it comes down to. So it's channel shift, right? So what does that mean for the NAMM show? Well, people want specialized service-oriented brand experiences. So at the NAMM show in 25, just in a couple months here in January, we have more demo rooms and more brand experience rooms than we've ever had. All the education sessions are over in the hotels now, and we've always had education in the hotels, but now we've opened up more and more rooms. I think every room in the convention hall, second floor, third floor, are all brand experience rooms because we want to create that environment. So you'll see that kind of shift. We still have a very strong attendance of retailers, but you know, we also see purchase influence. And so what we recognize in the way consumers are purchasing, and we did a bunch of research for NAMM members recently with Forrester Research, and we, you know, published it to look at trends of buying. What we're seeing in the shift of the NAMM show is has to be representative and actually future forward of the shift of how music of products in general, what consumer expectations are. And when you think about it, that traditional brick and mortar, you know, you went there and you got brand influence. That's where you got brand demand. What should I buy? Who makes this type of things? You know, like that kind of, we call it brand demand was there. Purchase influence was there. And then the transaction, cha-ching, was there. But those are in three different places now. And one of the biggest areas where like brand demand is really driven by brands now. And that's what brands are using the NAMM show for. They're there to drive global brand demand and in person with their retailers and their suppliers and their wholesalers, but also with global media influencers. They're there to drive global brand demand. And that happens at the NAMM show, but that happens year round with what brands are doing. And then influence, the rise of the social influencer, the podcaster, the YouTuber, the Instagram, TikTok influencer. That's a lot of consumers are watching these folks to decide shootouts between different amps and what DAW should I use and how do I learn this? And all of that's happening in the social influence sphere. And that's a really new, and that's where we're leaning into because social influencers, that area is really going to help make that connection at NAMM for brands and retailers because the social influencers are creating most of the influence, but they're not doing the transaction. So then the consumer goes and says, well, where do I do the transaction? Well, I want a trusted place that's going to give me service. Yes, they're trying, you know, some are just trying to find the best price because they made up their mind and now they're Googling model numbers. We know that exists. But thinking about the difference between brand demand, influence of the purchase, and transaction and across all industries helps us shape and format the NAMM show to be relevant to what companies and consumers want today. And I think we're really onto something here.
One of the things that always kind of baffled me about online purchasing of musical instruments is that, you know, it's such an individual experience. And you know what it's like. You'll pick up a certain instrument. There'll be two of the same thing, same models right there. And you'll pick one up and one will have the magic and the other one won't.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And you don't get that from an online purchase. You just don't know. It's the luck of the draw.
We see it by category. I mean, you're exactly right, Bobby. Like, you look at, like, buying software, people aren't trying five different downloads of software to see which one sounds better. You know, it's like electronic hardware. Like, those things, you know, we're seeing more online channels. But when it comes to, like, you know, mid-level guitars and higher acoustic guitars, like, people want to touch it and feel it. And we have some really great online guitar retailers that are showing, like, detailed pictures of every piece of wood grain and, you know, doing, like, return options and simulating that in creative ways. But, you know, the brick and mortar that are doing really well are specialized drum shops. You know, no cymbal sounds the same. So you see those areas where there is the specialized about which product, and the retailers that are doing specialized service in that area, that's where we're seeing successful. We just have to recognize that there's certain product categories that are a lot easier to purchase online, and there's some that are more specialized in store. And we're just going to have to, I'd say, don't fight the inevitable. We're going to have to make that shift and go. We have to go where the consumers go, because they're going to go there, and they're going there because every other industry is, quite frankly, already there. Right? Mm-hmm. Go to a shopping mall today. How many one-stop, large department, Macy's, JCPenney type experiences do you have versus how many individual specialized experience shops do you have? Case in point, fashion's gone there, luxury's gone there. We have to go there because that's what consumers expect.
One of the things that you just mentioned that I'd like to pursue a little bit, the music creation experience has changed. And once upon a time, it was all based around bands. You're playing with other people. And now so much of it is just the one man band, the one, you know, the single producer in the bedroom. And that's changed not only the way music sounds and is created, but music acquisition, gear acquisition as well. Much of that gear, you don't need a specialized shop for. Unfortunately. How do you square that?
No, it's a great question. You don't need a special, again, it goes back to, like, I guess there's a fourth component, because I mentioned, like, brand demand, influence, transaction. But I think the fourth component is just ongoing education and lifelong learning. And so, like, you don't need a specialized shop to buy the product per se, unless you want to, like, put your hands on it and really kind of see what it's like, or unless you want to go in and talk to someone about how you would use it in your own musical pursuits. That's where you see that. But those bedroom producers also need a network, and they also need, like, a connection. And that's why you see, you know, every DAW or, you know, company has their own sort of, like, cloud. You know, you have, like, Avid Connect's been around for a while, and of course you have, like, Personasphere's been out for a while, and you have, like, Roland. And yeah, all these folks have their sort of, like, they're building their ecosystems, you know, because they recognize that these, you know, individualized bedroom producers still want to educate. So I think it's the education piece is where, again, retailers or educators, or there's still an opportunity to engage these folks. And that's what now today drives more gear, that education. You know what? Because the more those people get educated, oh, what does that sound? Oh, I can use this plugin. Where do I buy that? Oh, I can use this. Oh, I don't have that type of ribbon mic yet. Well, let me get that one now. You know, like, that education is what's driving products.
One of the things that we both know is how big music education, recording education is in colleges. Every college has a program now. Even community colleges have a program. And I always wondered why, and maybe this is the case and I'm just not aware, but the programs that I'm aware of don't have a connection with the local retailer, that you'd think they would say, well, just go here and, you know, try this out, you know. Oh yeah, we're talking about this in class today and we don't have one, but go here and try one out. And I don't see that happening, but maybe I'm just not aware. Maybe it is, and I'm not aware.
It's, you know, you're right. On a broad scale, I haven't seen it happening, but there's probably little pockets of it where there's, you know, retailers that have close relationships with their local university. But you're hitting on something. So one of the biggest things we're looking at, you know, on the foundation side, and we consider the foundation, yes, it's a charitable foundation, but at NAMM, our foundation does market development. How do we go out there and grow the market so we have more music makers? One of the big areas that's keeps coming up, and we just had a meeting yesterday to say, you know what, we're going to formally go after this, is degree design. Because we have all these different degrees that have been popped up all over. We work very closely with College Music Society and other institutions, you know, Berkeley and others we have at the show. We built really good partnerships. And now we're asking ourselves, how do we use what NAMM does year-round and the NAMM show to get not only the universities to the table, but also the manufacturers and retailers to the table and the curriculum publishers to the table? Because if we could all like really talk about degree design and have a little more consistency and realize the successes of working together with industry, it could be really, really powerful.
I know I have four or five books that are kind of in colleges everywhere in programs. And one of the keys for that is there's a instructor's resource kit available for them all. And that's driven a lot of sales, and mostly because I think you have people that are starting in a curriculum and you know, teaching, and they're not sure exactly what to teach, you know, speaking of curriculum design. So one of the keys to my success in that end of the business is the fact that I've kind of done it for them, or at least given them many suggestions. And I've often wondered, and maybe I'm giving away a secret here, I shouldn't, but it's like, well, you know, there should be more of that.
No, there absolutely should be. And again, our ultimate job is to grow this industry. Like, NAMM's purpose is not to grow a trade show, it's to grow an industry. And everything we can do at the trade show and everything we can do for members, everything we can do research, insights-wise, all the stuff we do, that's at the heart. And it's lofty and it's hard to measure, but it doesn't stop us. So I think you're onto something. Like, for us, anything we could share with every college, university, community college out there to help them, you know, align and take the best of the best of what everyone's doing, because it just creates more students that are going to go into this field, not only as recording engineers and producers, but also we have a huge careers in music initiative right now. And that's the real big workforce development, and careers in music is the biggest push, because these students are studying, but they could also study and say, you know, I might want to be a producer, but I also might want to be a product manager for this, or I might want to be a, you know, be a salesperson to like be able to talk about. Because I think one thing I learned early on, and I met you very early in my career, and you were very influential to me as someone that's like such a strong audio engineer, producer, but also educator, is that, you know, you think of like, oh, a sales job, that's an educator job. Sales is education. That's a cool like, we'd love every student studying to know that there are numerous careers in our industry and in music making, and quite frankly, in both. Make music here, make products here, to make music there. It's a great opportunity.
One of the interesting things, just an aside that kind of illustrates that, there's a group of guys that we all get together. We started together in Hollywood. We got here about the same time. And we get together once a month or so and have dinner. And the interesting thing is, out of all of us, we're all musicians at first. And out of this group, there's only one that stayed as a musician and still plays and is a very semi-famous player. And everybody else has been successful in the music business, but not in the direction they anticipated. And again, you're talking about product managers and head of development here and sound designer here. And, you know, so it does change. And I don't think there's enough awareness of how that happens. And it does happen. And it's kind of a natural thing. So that anything that could get that across, I think, is very powerful.
Yeah, we're launching, it should be live by the time this is aired, careers.nam.org. and we're just outlining all the career opportunities in the music industry. We have toolkits and presentations that are downloadable so that, you know, NAMM members and really anyone in the world can download and go to their local college, go to their even high school. We've had NAMM members pilot this in middle schools doing career presentations, say early on, like, hey, study, learn music, and your musical skills could get you the opportunity to be a marketer at a music company. You want to be a drummer? You could go work at Zildjian and make drums and also gig on the side, and you could also teach lessons like that. That's the gig. And that's just a really, that's the big opportunity we have. And so careers.nam.org is new. We actually started it as a landing page on our foundation website. And then it had so much traffic and so much opportunity. It's now an entire subdomain of nam.org.
If you're tired of your mixes coming out muddy, thin, or lifeless, I have great news. You can take the quality of your mixes from amateur to pro level using the techniques of the world's top mixers. I'll show you these quick solutions to 15 common mix problems with my Mix Fix playbook. Go to go.bobbyosinski.com/mixfix to check it out now. Very cool. Let's talk about NAMM 2025, Winter NAMM. And I know that you've been studying trade shows, and you just mentioned about how you go to many to find out what's working and what isn't. What is going to be different from your standpoint?
So we're taking a little different approach this year in that we're doing a 5-day event with 3 days of exhibits. And this is, you know, from what you look at, I mean, obviously like Avixa Infocom, they do like a week of education before they open exhibit hall. Many other shows do this type of thing. We've, you know, from surveys of members, from talking to members, the desire to have more education, to strengthen their business and to network early on is really there. And you and I both know people have always showed up to NAMM on Monday and had meetings all day Tuesday and Wednesday before they hit the floor Thursday. Like, that's not even new. So on one hand, it's just like, look, if you're in Anaheim the third week of January, you're not there by accident. You're there for NAMM. So part of it's like, look, if you're walking around Anaheim on Tuesday, you're at NAMM. But we also have a more long form education and networking opportunities. International growth is very, very big for us right now, especially with Music Mesa and other shows no longer around. So the international community all comes to NAMM. So we have international reception on Wednesday. We're formally doing Global Media Day. Wednesday is all about product launches. Tuesday we have Day of Service, Advocacy, Retail Summits, Financial, AI, all kinds of things. So we're giving people the opportunity to come in and get more long-form education. We have more Dante training Wednesday now. Like, just get there and like get your hands on and do that type of long-form education. And then when the floor opens Thursday, Friday, Saturday, we still have NAMU sessions and everything going on like we always have. But those are more of the 30-minute type sessions, so you can hit the floor, see the product. So we're going for like maximum energy Thursday, Friday, Saturday at the show and having, you know, more opportunities for education throughout the week. It's always that idea too. You bump into someone on Friday night or Saturday at the NAMM show, like, oh my gosh, I wish I'd known you were here. I can't connect with you. Yeah. So we're trying to like come in, network, realize who's there. The app allows you to build networking connections right now. We've actually launched the show schedule earlier than we ever have. In fact, it launched November 4th. So the app is live, never been live this early. The entire education session schedule is live. You can go in and start planning your NAMM and building your connections right now. And that's what we're sort of building up to. So that's what you'll see. 4 nights of awards. Of course, we got Parnelli Awards. We love that. We have Tech Awards. We have She Rocks closing us out Saturday night. Major artist on stage. I wish I could announce it. I don't know when it's going to be announced, so I can't announce the artist, but it is a massive artist that's super hot A-lister right now. So we're really excited about the show.
I'm excited to, as always, to go. It's one of those things where it's can't miss.
Yeah, you can't miss.
Tell me about Summer NAMM.
Well, so Summer NAMM is no more. We tried Summer NAMM in 2021 in the midst of the pandemic, and it was not successful in 2021. So we decided, and at that time, you know, Music Mesa had closed down, and we talked to a lot of folks and said the world needs one large international gathering right now. And so we made the conscious decision to come back out of COVID and build a strong global gathering for the entire industry. And it's really important because now our companies are more global than ever. So having two trade shows and having people, you know, either attend both, which is cost more for them, or some say, okay, well, I can drive into this one, so I won't go to that one. It creates a disparity. And again, I know a lot of folks in Nashville miss Summer NAMM because they could just drive up, but the manufacturers and suppliers and wholesalers and everyone out in the international folks at NAMM want to come to one place and see everyone. And so we made the conscious effort to winter NAMM. There's actually one NAMM show. It's January Anaheim, and it is the only global show that exists. So what we did in the summer instead is we launched NAMM Next. And we did it in 2024. We've already announced the dates for 2025. We're doing NAMM Next. It's a new conference. It's not a trade show. It is a high-level leadership summit to bring together the leaders of the companies in our industry to learn about what other industries are doing, to think about how we grow our industry together. And we brought in speakers, you know, global economics. We brought in people from McForrester Research, talk about consumer trends, AI, marketing, all of these big things that we're all trying to figure out individually. We brought in experts from other industries to help us all understand where we need to go and how we need to compete. Pilot year, very successful. It was beautiful. We had a beautiful session. We had the CMO of Thomann. We had a CMO of Gibson. We had the CEO of Taylor and Martin Guitars all on the same stage. Not talking about competing, talking about how we grow an industry and how you take a legacy business and innovate through hundreds of years. And that's the type of thing. So NAMM Next is really exciting. We're putting it on again. We only have room for 400 people, but it's a small group. But we'll have the top companies in our industry thinking about how we grow together. And we're going to keep running with that for a little while.
I don't know if you remember when Summer NAMM was in Chicago. Is that before? That's before your time.
Before my time.
Yeah. Okay. It was as big as Summer NAMM or Winter NAMM, and maybe even bigger.
Oh, yeah. For a long time, the Chicago show was the big show. Winter NAMM was, yeah. And that actually changed in the early 90s. It started to shift when, again, a lot of manufacturing was moving. China was coming up as this really strong manufacturer. And like really, it was the desire for more international, especially from Asia, and a shift to, you know, people liked the sunshine in January.
Yeah.
It shifted over that time.
I've had a European manufacturer actually tell me that, where it's like, well, yeah, we want to go to Southern California when it's cold here, you know, rather than when the weather is nice. I mean, you know, it's not supposed to be a factor, but it is.
Yeah, no, I remember when the McCormick Place Chicago show, because NAMM was based in Chicago, yeah. It was founded in Chicago for there a long time, and actually Larry Lincoln moved it, you know, in the 90s because he had the foresight to realize that like Southern California was going to be the stronger place. So that's why our office is here in Carlsbad. Our office was built, I think, 1998. We were formally in. And so we've been in Anaheim. We've actually been in Anaheim for 49 years. January will be the 49th year we're in Anaheim, minus the two we moved to LA during the construction period in like 97.
Yeah.
So yeah, we've, you know, it's this, and maybe, you know, we look at a long timeline. We're a 124-year-old organization. So maybe 50 years from now, someone else will be looking and say, yeah, remember when Chicago was the big show, then Anaheim was the big show, and then maybe 30 years from now, it'll be somewhere else, and that'll be the big show. But
I want to come back to the show again, and then one other place I want to go to with you. Last year, some major manufacturers didn't show. Fender, Gibson, for instance. Is that a trend? Is that something that's going to continue?
Oh, they're all back. They're on the map. Go to NAMM.org, look at the map, look at the list of brands. Fender, Gibson, Roland, Music Tribe, In Music. I mean, everyone. And I will and look, I will give, you know, a lot of respect and credit to our industry, right? Like, yes, we want the industry back. This year at NAMM, we are united. We have everyone at the show. We're there. And we respect our companies looking at and figuring out what does a trade show and a NAMM show mean for me going forward. Some companies during the pandemic, their sales dropped overnight. Some companies, their sales doubled overnight, both creating problems. And then the ones that dropped picked up just as fast. The ones that doubled dropped just as fast. And so we're all in a little bit of a chaos. A decision to attend the NAMM show for a company is made a minimum 8 months before, if not 12 to 16. It's a long, especially the big ones that have to be a big Bruce and budget and all that. So the decision about January 24 was quite frankly made in 22 and 23 for a lot of these companies in the midst of absolute chaotic times. But I will say they were all there. I personally met with the ones you mentioned. We walked around the floor. We had lengthy conversations about what does a NAMM show look like for you? What do we need to build as your association with this space to help your business succeed and beyond? And I love the fact that we can have really like intimate conversations with our companies and help craft something that helps them, because that's our job. And so we have, you know, with Roland back and Fender back and all the big brands coming back, they're not just back to say, okay, NAMM's relevant again. It's they're back because we are working and talking with their teams almost daily about how we craft an experience that makes sense to them. So I'm happy they're back, and our commitment as NAMM is we're not going back to 2020. Every year we have to look at what the industry is, what the dynamics of the industry are, and craft a trade show that helps us propel the most success for industry in the forward. In that future year. So the NAMM show to me is not a reaction to the past year. It's always about creating success for our companies in the year ahead. They need to come to NAMM and have more success all of 2025 because they're there in January. And that's our commitment to why people come to us.
That's excellent. It's great to hear. Because they were missed, I have to say.
Yeah, and they missed it too. I mean, I think a lot of it. So they're all missed. We're so happy to have them back. And you know, the conversations we're having now are what does success look like for you on January 26th, the day the show's over? Like, what does that look like? Because we want to know what we can do. And I like it because I mean, we want to be partners. We're not a transaction. We're not a building. We're an association, and that's what really through COVID, I think for NAMM helped us really go back to like, what is our purpose? Trade show was canceled because California wouldn't allow gatherings. What is our purpose? Well, we're not canceled because we are an industry. And I think that was a really, you know, sometimes you need a little poke in the head sometimes to remember your true purpose. And we know it now.
Let's talk a little bit about you so people get to know you better. I know you're a trumpet player. I know you're big in music education or you were prior to this. And we met when you were head of education for Personas. So how did you get there?
Yeah. So, you know, again, I was that kid that just from as early as memory as I have, like touching something that made a sound, whether it's like my grandma's piano in the dining room or like the guitars all over the house and my dad would just leave around or anything, you know, like when I'd go to my grandma's house, she'd have like a violin. I was like, what is this thing? You know, I just loved it. So like music, I'm going to do band. I never got a choice of elective, you know, it was always, I'm going to do band. So I did trombone and later got smart and played trumpet, played guitar. What are you going to do in college? I'm going to be a music teacher. There was like no question. I never having a thought, like any other job was not even considered. And then I went to grad school in Louisiana, played trumpet professionally. So I had the first part of my life was like a tunnel vision race to be a music teacher and a performer. So here I am. I wake up at like 25 years old. I'm teaching music. I'm gigging in New Orleans. I'm doing the thing. It's all fun. And you're like, wait a minute, what's next? And I went back and did a second master's in educational leadership. Maybe I'll do arts and men one day, you know, oversee music for a district or something. That kind of sounds like something cool. And then at the same time, I was always loved technology. I was recording myself as a trumpet player. I was recording school bands. I was recording individuals and ensembles for competitions, you know, editing CDs like crazy. And I had a professor that taught me that. And I ended up starting a music technology program at my school just because I thought it would be fun. And this is like 2007, 2008. Like we had just gotten like the iPad come out in 2010. So like the MacBook had GarageBand. So we had some MacBooks at the school. I'm like, hey, I can pull up this thing called GarageBand and maybe see if I can make music with kids on this thing. And the kids loved it. In fact, there was no music technology program in Louisiana. I was actually told by the school's registrar that I'm not allowed to teach it because the state came back with our course list and said, this isn't an approved course. So me being a trumpet player and arrogant, I went to the state and said, what do I have to do to make it an approved course? Submitted a curriculum, submitted lesson artifacts, did a 3-year follow-up, and I made music technology an approved course for the state. And then all these other schools started like wanting to teach it because it showed up on the course roster, and so they will call John. So I started traveling around Louisiana doing workshops on, you know, working with band directors that know how to, you know, move their arms, but not how to teach, you know, a doll. So I started doing that, and it was really, really fun. And then I'm like, met some folks at PreSonus. They had just came out with Studio One version 2. And I was like, wait, y'all work on Mac and PC? And like, this stuff is like prime for education. So they said, hey, we're thinking about getting into this market. Do you want to come and be a market manager? I said, what's a market manager? So you control a channel. I said, what's a channel? I'm like, you know, so and I said, no, I want to make curriculum and rubrics. And they said, what's a rubric? And I was like, you know, so like we were having these different conversations. And there was this magical moment in my career that suddenly PreSonus is like, I'm going to take a chance on you. And I looked at them and said, I'm going to take a chance on you. And that was January 1, 2013, I started. They said, pack your bags. You're going to LA. You're going to the NAMM show. I said, what's the NAMM show? And I walked into the NAMM show, and here I am, gigging musician in a band that had in-ear monitors. We're doing iPad control. We're gigging all over. Like, you know, so I'm like teaching audio and music. I'm teaching traditional music, teaching guitar lessons, like playing trumpet. Like, I'm like, I've had all these experiences with all these various products. And I walk into NAMM, and I'm like, how did I not know this world exists? And I'll tell you, Bobby, that moment, and you know this better than I do, and you know, meeting you early on was so influential. I'm like, what is this product industry? So I started walking around the NAMM show in 2013, and I start looking at what's happening in the booths. And I see people doing demos. And I'm listening. I'm like, you know what? This is an education show. All I see are people demoing products, but they're teaching how to mix and how to move sound and how to – it was a dream come true. And then finally, just to like top it all off, I started looking at the session schedule and found like a NAMM foundation session and realized like, so wait, this is all about a foundation that gives back to create more music makers. Like this can't be a real place. And then I was on fire. That was it. Like that, I came back. So I was nervous. I left teaching. I left my kids. I was like, I failed at teaching. I've given up a new career. I'm going to be a marketing channel manager. I've given up. I had this like kind of regret. For like 2 weeks, I got to the NAMM show. I was on fire. And the next 10 years was bam, 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 PreSonus, meeting you. We did some great curriculum projects. We did work with Hal Leonard. Hal Leonard hired me. I went to Hal Leonard. I ended up being vice president of education and technology for Hal Leonard. And then when the NAMM job came up, it was like everything I loved was always NAMM. So of course I applied. And I think I'm lucky enough to have worked in retail, have designed products. I've been in marketing, have worked in software, Hal Leonard distribution. Like I've seen and worked in all these areas of the industry, so I understand our ecosystem and I just like learning. So it's like, oh, I have to do marketing, I'll figure this out. I have to do this, you know, so that's how I ended up here at NAMM.
Well, I have to say you're the perfect guy for the job. Perfect. And I know just from our brief discussion here, I can tell that NAMM is thriving and it's going to thrive even more in the future. So thank you for that.
Oh, well, thank you. That means the world coming from you, my friend.
Last question, John. What's the best piece of advice that maybe you learned along the way or maybe somebody imparted to you?
I'm not struggling to find one. I'm struggling to narrow down.
Okay.
I'll tell you, the first thing that comes to mind is we're built on mentors and mistakes, and both are equally as valuable. I mean, I could go through my career and I could draw dots of when I felt I met a mentor that gave me a chance or taught me something or like took me in under their wing and opened up a door. And Rick Nockey at PreSonus being one, and you can go on and on and on. So I think that's the thing. And also, mistakes, like you got to make them. It's part of the journey. Like it's okay. Like we all do it. And like, you know, you could like stop at mistakes, but learning as a trumpet player, you know, you make mistakes all the time. You go in the practice room, you work it out. I mean, that's what you learn as a musician. And I think, you know, that's really important. I think a lot of the advice that I've gotten that's been super successful for me in business has actually come from my days of being a musician. Because I was a really serious trumpet player for a while and doing some really big gigs, and I had, you know, fun musical experiences. But a lot of it was like advice like, shut your mouth and play your butt off. And, you know, like, show up on time, don't be a jerk, and know your part. You know, like, just be prepared and treat people right. And it, you don't have to be the best trumpet player. You have to be the most reliable, and you have to treat people right, and you have to be the one that people want to work with. And you have to know the part. You could be a better trumpet player, but you could show up not prepared. And I think advice like that, like, it doesn't matter what comes out of your mouth, it matters what comes out of your bell. And that was a lot of it. Like, it just, it results matter. And even in business, like, well, we're doing this. I said, well, you're doing that, but what's coming out of your bell? What's the outcome? How does it affect? Like, NAMM could do 1,000 activities at the show. That doesn't matter. What are people experiencing? The post-show survey results are what matter, outcomes. So I think the best advice I've ever got, I would say don't, also, like, don't disparage what we learn in that pursuit of musical excellence. Those skills are business skills in a huge way. And I think that's the other thing. It's like, oh, you, we mentioned earlier, well, I didn't make it as a musician, but I made it as something else. You made it as something else because we spent a lot of time in an endless pursuit of perfection. And we learned to pick ourselves up when something doesn't go right. Cool. Let me go back to the studio the next day and I will figure it out. Not people in other industries and maybe other career paths, they don't learn that early on. Right? We have that. So
Yeah,
that answers the question.
That's good stuff. Yeah. No, I've asked this a lot, and I don't think anyone's ever taken that approach to it. So it's excellent. Thank you, John. I think it's a good place to stop. Thanks so much. This is great to catch up as always. I wish we could do it more. Maybe I'll see you at NAMM, but you'll probably be too crazy.
Oh, run up and say hi. Everyone else does. It'll be great. That's my favorite part. So I appreciate you, my friend. And Bobby, really, like, you know, you're someone that has such an amazing impact on the industry and impact on my career. And you're one of those mentor moments. You know, you meet someone, it unlocks something for you in a career, and it's great to talk to you, I think, 10 years later.
Yeah, it's been a while now. Yeah. Well, cool. I'm glad I could help some small way.
Appreciate you, my friend.
Thanks for listening and being in my inner circle. Remember, if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to questions@bobbyosinski.com. You can also learn all about the latest in music, audio, and production news, and find out about openings for my latest online classes at bobbyosinski.com. This is Bobby Osinski. I will see you next time.